and unsurpassed penetrating and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good morning. So the subject for today is the Buddha's robe. Dogen Zenji wrote two fascicles about the Yokesa, the robe. One of them is called Kesa Kudoku, the merit of the robe. And the other is called Dene, transmitting, Kesa Dene, transmitting the robe. So in Kesa Kudoku, there's a section where Dogen writes, "While I was in Song, China, doing my training on the long platform in the meditation hall, I saw that every morning after the striking of the wake-up blocks, the monks on either side of me would raise their folded kesa in a gesture of offering, and hold it up like this, and they'd place it on their head and respectfully make gassho and recite a verse. At that time, there arose a feeling in me that I have never before experienced. My body was overwhelmed with joy. Tears of gratitude secretly fell and soaked my lapels. Seeing this done here, before my very eyes, I was overjoyed." It's a really beautiful passage. So Dogen had not seen this practice in Japan. And from my experience, I haven't seen it in any other Buddhist tradition than Soto. In the Rinzai tradition, where Genpo is practicing and where I've practiced, we didn't do a robe chant. I talked to Dhammadipa, who's a Theravada nun, and they don't have a robe chant. But Dogen brought this practice back to Japan from China almost 800 years ago. And for 800 years, practitioners in Soto Zen temples have done a verse opening the robe every morning. So as we begin aspects of practice, we will again do the robe chant, put on our roksus and our okesas, and open our robes at the start of every day. We'll do this because we have a 6 a.m., because there are some people who are sitting at 6 a.m., and the bulk of people are sitting at 7:30 right now. We'll do that in both sections. So even if you do not have a physical robe, please gassho during the chant, which honors the invisible robe that each of us wears. And we'll talk more about that in a little while. Just checking, is the sound okay? Is it? Yes? Okay, good. So since it's been many months of pandemic when we haven't been chanting, I took this opportunity to introduce a version, the version of the robe chant that's slightly different than the one that we have chanted. It seems to be a slightly more accurate translation that was developed by the Soto Zen text translation project. And most of the temples I've been in here are using this. And it's something that I discussed with Sojin Roshi some years ago, and we both agreed that since we were doing the chant that was in place for all these years, it didn't make sense to just change it abruptly. But since we're reintroducing it, I thought I would take the time to share this with you now. And there it is in the text, in the chat. You can see it. So let's just take a moment and collect yourself. And then I will lead the chant, and please chant it along to yourself, still muted, so that we don't have cacophony, but you'll have a chance to place it in your body. Great robe of liberation, field far beyond form and emptiness, wearing the Tathagata's teaching, saving all beings. Daisai Gita Uku Muso Fukudene Ibu Nyoraikyo Kodo Shochu Jo. Great robe of liberation, field far beyond form and emptiness, wearing the Tathagata's teaching, saving all beings. So we chant this and then we put on our rakusu or our okesa. I love wearing the robe, whether it's the okesa or the rakusu. These are both ordination robes. Usually the okesa is made up of seven strips of long and short pieces, and the rakusu is made of five. The rakusu, the source of it is a little obscure, but the general supposition is that rakusus were created during a period of Buddhist repression in China, when the state was trying to suppress Buddhism in the country. And so monks and nuns were not allowed to wear their full visible robes. And so they created this other small garment that they wore under their clothes. It's also what we wear if we're going to a Buddhist event, at Sogenji, where Gempo was, most of the day you would wear your rakusu. You would put your okesa on for service in the morning. But for daily events, you would wear your rakusu. It just is, it's a less cumbersome piece of cloth, but it is still Buddha's robe. So we have ordination ceremonies where the robe is given. Generally, in our tradition, each of us sews our own robe. And all of you who've been through lay ordination, receiving the precepts, you also receive the rope. And even though you have sown it, you give it to the preceptor or your teacher, and that teacher gives it back to you as a correct transmission. So we have several robe giving ceremonies. We have lay ordination, which we also call jukai. Jukai means receiving the precepts. And we will have our first jukai in 2 years on November 6th, I believe. So it'll be during Aspects of Practice. And 4 people will receive their raksus. And you also receive a Dharma name during, and a lineage paper during that ceremony. We sew the raksu ourselves. We also sew our full okesa for priest ordination. And in priest ordination, we receive that okesa. And then there are other occasions in which you might receive a raksu or a robe. We have shuso ceremony, where generally there's a raksu that's given to the shuso or the head student. There's lay entrustment, in which mature students who are really have the capacity to teach the Dharma are given a green raksu. And then at Dharma transmission, you receive a brown okesa. So we have these different colors. But they all are Buddha's robe. In a sense, there's no difference between them because they represent the same thing. Now, I'll say a little more about what that is and what the meaning of the robe chant, what it implies. So we have these different colors, but all the robes are constructed in the form of a rice field. Okamura Rishi talks about this in there's a section on the robe in Living by Vow. He says, "One day the Buddha, walking in the countryside with his attendant Ananda, noticed the beautiful patterns of rice paddies newly planted with green seedlings and surrounded by footpaths. The Buddha remarked to Ananda, 'These are so beautiful. Could you make a robe like this?' Ananda agreed. So the Buddha conceived the pattern and Ananda created the design." Another story about this, which comes from Vinaya text, says basically the same thing. When the Blessed One was on his way home from Rajagaha to the southern hills, he said to the Venerable Ananda, his attendant, "Do you see the land of Magadha laid out in squares, laid out in strips, laid out with borders, laid out with cross lines?" "Yes, Lord." "Try to arrange robes for the monks like that, Ananda." And one of the reasons that they did that they designed a robe, was because all of mendicants wore robes. And what Buddha wanted to do with his order was have one that was identifiably connected with our practice and wasn't necessarily going to be confusing to other people. So that's some of the origin. And as I said, the Rakusu is constructed of five rows, and the Okesa is constructed of seven or nine. There's a wonderful section that I found from a lecture by Suzuki Roshi, and this speaks to the broader context, I think. The reason Dogen refers to many kinds of robes is that the robe should always be with you. The robe is not some special thing you put on and wear. That's the wrong idea. It is something you have always with you, like the third ancestor in India's robe. That's Sanavasa or Shonavaju. The third ancestor in India's robe. He was born with the robe, so it was not possible for him to take it off. His skin was already his robe. That's pretty interesting. I tried to track that one down. I haven't found it yet, but I'm going to keep looking. So the thing is, when we put on the robe, it should replace our ego. Our ego is often the robe that we wear without thinking about it. So ego, when it's replaced by the robe, means ego is replaced by vow. And vow is a field, a virtuous field. Vow is the path of liberation. Vow is formless or boundless beyond form and emptiness. It's a really wonderful story that I'd heard from several sources. I think it's in one of David Chadwick's book. Part of it is the first part, but the second part is really interesting. So I remembered the story, and I found it in searching around in a lecture that Okamura Roshi wrote. So he says, I think it was in the early 1960s, according to Mel's story, to Sojin's story. So at Sokoji, they sat every morning and chanted the robe chant. And they sat every morning and did zazen. But after morning zazen, they chanted this strange verse in Japanese. So no American understood what this means. Mel Weitzman asked Suzuki Roshi, what is this chant after morning zazen? Mel said, Katagiri Roshi started to find a translation of the robe chant, but somehow he couldn't find it. So probably they didn't even have an English translation yet. Sojin said, Suzuki Roshi came up to him and pointed to his heart and said, love. Love. Mel was really impressed with this answer. It was wonderful. Heart and love. In 1999, there was a symposium at Stanford University to celebrate the 800th anniversary of Dogen's birth. Sojin told this story at the symposium. But after we finished that session, Professor Carl Bielefeld, a Dogen scholar who had been very close to Suzuki Roshi, asked Okamura Roshi, how do Japanese people pronounce robe? Robe is R-O-B-E, and love is L-O-V-E. In Japan, We have no distinction between the L sound and the R sound, and the B sound and the V sound. So for us, Japanese, pronouncing robe and love is very difficult. I still can't do it correctly. Carl guessed that Suzuki Roshi pointed to his rakusu and said, "Robe." It's very difficult, this is Okamura, it's very difficult to translate or transmit something important and subtle and deep from one culture to another culture. So I'm not sure whether this is a misunderstanding or not. This was just Carl's guess. Maybe Suzuki Roshi really said love, but that's okay. It's a positive and creative misunderstanding. Because it is a heart-to-heart transmission, the transmission from Suzuki Roshi to Sojin, the transmission that is received by each of us when we receive the robe, because it is a heart-to-heart transmission, I think it's wonderful. So what was Suzuki Roshi saying? Was it love? Was it robe? I don't think it really matters. What matters is this heart-to-heart transmission. That is what we are affirming when we read this verse, great robe of liberation. Feel far beyond form and emptiness, wearing the Tathagata's teaching, saving all means. For me, what I often say about these ordinations, all of our ordination ceremonies are about receiving the precepts. They're about receiving the precepts from someone who has received it according to a correct transmission and is transmitting it to us according to a correct transmission. So the way I have taken this is that receiving the precepts, putting on the robe for the first time, there's something deeply transformative about it. There's something that changes us, even though we may not know exactly what it is yet. And in fact, because it's boundless, we may never know exactly what it is. It reminds me of what I felt when I got married the first time. I felt that something had happened. Something was different, but I didn't know what it was. And I think that's the way, that's what I feel about these ordinations. And I've always felt them, you know. I think that our first lay ordination was in the spring of 1985. This was after Sojin Roshi had received Dharma transmission from Koitsu Suzuki in Japan. And he came back and there was a group of people who'd been practicing for quite a while and he did first ordination. And I remember watching that. And as each person received their rakusu, received their lineage paper and their new name, I felt like Dogen, tears just flowing from my eyes. And I feel that even now as I'm trying to talk about it. And I felt that at every ceremony that I've attended of that sort since then, because consciously or not, we're witnessing a moment of transformation for the ordinee. Something that very, very difficult for them to give back. And that's the way I feel about the robe. Once the robe is put on, the essence of it can never be removed. And so it's really important to remember that when we are moving about in our so-called everyday life, and we're not wearing our rakusu or our okesa, but we are, because it's our skin, like sanavasa. The robe becomes our skin, and we can't take it off. There's not like a time out. So to look at the verse a bit, before I open for questions, this great robe of liberation. That's one that's a translation. So dai means great. Sa is just kind of an exclamation point, like great. Gida means free or unhindered. And puku is a word for clothes. So it's the great clothes of freedom. Daizai geta puku. So our relationship with this is not just a relationship to the robe, but it's also how we relate to our lives. And then it goes on, there are two other descriptors of the robe. The next line is mu so fuku dene. Mu means nothing, but it also has been interpreted as all-inclusive. As everything, as boundlessness. When we say nothing, we mean mu is not a thing. Does the dog have the Buddha nature? Mu. The dog is the Buddha nature. It doesn't have something. The robe that we wear is who we are. Fuku means merit or blessings or virtue. So really it modifies it modifies the next word. Den means rice field. So it's like the virtuous rice field that is the virtuous boundless rice field. That is the robe. A is robe. The wearing, the clothing is the virtuous, is the field of virtue, which is a rice field. It's boundless or it's formless. Then the last line, or the next last line, Hibu Nuyoraikyo, he is unfold, and Bu is wear. So unfolding and wearing. And Nyorai is the Tathagata. And Kyo is teaching. Like Enmei Juku Kanan Gyo, Kyo and Gyo, the same word, teaching. Thus, we have wearing the Tathagata's teaching. And then the last line is Kodo Shoshujo. Kodo means to save widely. Sho means various. Shu means people. And Jo means alive or sentient. So, saving all the various sentient beings. So I'm just looking at, I think it's useful to look at the Japanese that we use to translate this. But I think that we can return to this questionable exchange between Sojin and Suzuki Roshi and just accept that love, whether he said robe or love, robe and love are the same thing. And when we come to this practice, and we do it every day, this is why I encourage everybody to put their hands in gassho and do the robe chant, because whether you have directly been given an object called the robe, doing the chant, we're putting on our invisible robe. We're taking this vow, and we're allowing ourselves to be transformed. One of the things that I learned from Sojin Roshi, when I spoke to him many years ago about wishing to be ordained as a priest, what he said was, he didn't say yes. I had to ask him a few times, which is not unusual. But what he did say was, I want you to practice as a priest. So if you're thinking about priest ordination or lay ordination, start living that way now. Just live that way. Then, when those ordinations may occur, there's no surprise, Because first of all, people will already have seen you practicing that way. And what they'll see is not some new revelation, but a confirmation of what is already apparent. And not only will others see you that way, you can see yourself that way. So I think I'm going to open for questions and answers, but let's chant the rope chant together one more time. Great robe of liberation, field far beyond form and emptiness, wearing the Tathagata's teaching, saving all beings, Daisai Gira Uku, Muso Fuku Dene, Ibu Yoraikyo, Kodo Shoshujo, great robe of liberation, field far beyond form and emptiness, wearing the Tathagata's teaching, saving all beings. So thank you, and I will hand off the facilitation to Blake.
Here we are again. You know the ritual. I ask that you be direct in my humble request. Please be brief, and then we can maybe share the space more with people. So I invite you to raise your hand, digital hand, and I'll call on you. Rondi, yes, please unmute yourself and ask a question.
Thank you very much, Ozan, for a very comprehensive and informative talk. When someone receives the precepts, they receive their robe, but also a new name. So could you say something about the naming in relation to the robe?
Yes. So, you know, it happens, there's been a lot of discussion about the naming on Soto lists. What we have been receiving is two names consisting of two characters each. And one of them is known as your way name, which in a sense might represent characteristics, concrete characteristics that your teacher sees that you're already manifesting. And the second name is your Dharma name, which is a name that in a sense you grow into. Each of you have been lay ordained. You have two names, each of two Japanese characters each, or Chinese characters. That name is inscribed on your rakusu. And your rakusu is you receive a lineage paper which traces the Buddhist lineage from the Buddha through the Indian ancestors, through the Rinzai lineage and the Soto lineage, both of which were held by Dogen, then from Dogen on down to Suzuki Roshi and Sojin Roshi, and then either you received it from him or from one of his students, and your name goes last. And there's a red line, which is called the bloodline, which connects all of these ancestors and then loops back up to the top to place yourself symbolically on the head of the Buddha. So this is the lineage, presumably, of face-to-face, warm hand-to-warm hand transmission from the Buddha through 92 or 93 generations to each of us. So your name is inscribed on the Raksu, and different teachers do different things with the inscription, but your name is almost always on the Raksu. The Raksu is a kind of transmission document in a sense. You're wearing the Buddha's robe, but it's also you're wearing something that has been really dedicated and inscribed to you by your preceptor. So that's some answer.
Stan Dewey.
Thank you, Hozan, for a wonderful lecture. I really love that story about Suzuki Roshi and Sojin. That's just, I love the robe, the story. I wonder if you would be so kind as to put in the chat or an email or something the word for word translation of the Japanese that you went through, because I thought it was enlightening and helpful.
I will send it out, if it's okay. I'll send it out on the community list. It's a little it's more than I can put. For some reason I can't seem to paste stuff into the chat. So anyway, yeah, I will do that.
The chat goes away too, so it's good to have it.
I'll do it. I'll do it later today.
Something we can do.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Linda Hess.
Hozan, this is just a teeny little ritual action question. Usually we put put the whole envelope on the head, and then at the end of the chant, we take it off and remove the Raksu and wear it. That's right? That's the way we do it? Anyway, I just noticed when I was at Green Belt last year, they took it out first and they put the sort of bare naked Raksu on their head. And then, so as usual.
That's what we do.
Yeah?
That is what we do.
It is?
The only time we put it in the, there's different, for the Raksu, we take the Raksu out of the envelope and put it on our head. The only time that we put it in the envelope on our head is actually during the lay ordination ceremony.
Oh, so I've been doing it wrong all these years. Do you think I lost a whole lot of merit for that?
You've been doing it wrong. You're going to, the next stop, Avicii Hell.
Okay.
That doesn't matter. This is all, as Bernie Glassman said, this is all MSU, making stuff up.
Yeah. But
it's meaningful because we're consciously making stuff up.
Right. We can get pretty serious about it.
There's no sin involved.
Oh, thank God. Okay, thank you.
But just to further comment, one of the things that came up in this discussion was that how our naming methodology in the whole San Francisco lineage is kind of wrong. It's out of step with what other Soto does. And evidently, Mary Mosin had a conversation with Sojin about it, where he acknowledged that and said, you know, usually you would receive one name, one two-character name, which is what he did from Suzuki Roshi. So where this our present practice came from, I don't know. And nobody seems to know, because we've talked with all these Zen Center people have weighed in. But, you know, maybe that's the way it is. And that's what we do. That's, again, there's no sin in this.
Ross Blum.
Thank you. Good morning, Hosan.
Morning.
You've been a priest for a really long time, and it's been great to have you there as our priest at Abbott. And just to recall that the people wearing raka suits actually typically, for all the time that I've been here, put the envelope on their head and then take it out.
Oh, really? Okay.
So you've been out of practice for a while, so you get a pass. Now, okay. There are different places that do it different ways. And, yeah. You know, it's the bigger thing is like things are changing. So it's great if we can all be on the same so-called page around it. And we'll have a talk about that. It's, you know, one way or another way, we're all making it up. It reminded me of when I came here, we used to sit Zazen first. Then at the end of Zazen, there would be a bell, and then we would do the robe chant. And someone here who's no longer residing here said, you know, it'd be nice if we could sit with our robes. And so Sojin thought about it, says, yeah, that would be nice. And we changed that form.
Yeah.
I appreciate the transparency in our conversations to try to kind of do it all together, even though invariably we'll do it our own way in small or big ways.
Yeah. You may be right, and it's interesting. I remembered it differently, but I may have it backwards. In fact, maybe I do have it backwards. Maybe for Jukai, you take it out and put it on your head. I've got to look at
the ceremony.
This.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So I had it backwards, Linda.
Yeah.
So your sin is erased, but I think that the important thing. I think, as Ross was doing, wherever I go, I try to observe what their practice is. You know, so this happens a lot when I go, when I teach at Upaya, because they have a different lineage, which comes from Sojiji rather than the AEG, and a lot of things are a little different. And that's actually the fun part, is paying attention to how things are done and doing them in harmony with them. So I apologize if I was, I appreciate the correction. And I think that now that I think about it, I think you're right.
I think it may also have something to do with people coming to BZC are carrying their raka suits with their envelopes. They bring it into the zendo. And then as far as when do they take it out, do they leave it there out waiting for the bell, or just put it all in one piece when the bell? So again, it's one of those things that may have been explicitly suggested or just intuited over the years. Anyway, thanks.
But I wanted to say something about, this to me was one of the great, we were talking about it a little while ago when we were looking at Zendo forms. Sojin adjusted the forms according to the circumstances. And I think that's what, you know, that's what he did with the rope chant, that he when someone pointed out to me, he was, oh, that's right, let's sit in our robe instead of putting it on the end and then taking it off and going to Soji. Let's sit in our robe, which actually is different than you would find in other places. What we're doing is adjusted to our circumstances, and that seems to me to be really appropriate action.
Yeah. Thank you.
Helen C.
Hi, Hosan.
Morning.
Good morning. You had said that if you haven't undergone Jukai, you're planning to live as if you have. And could you say it more?
This is what, you know, to the story that maybe many of you have heard. When Sojin Roshi was ordained as a priest, he went to Suzuki Roshi and said, "What do I do now?" And Suzuki Roshi said, "I don't know. Go talk to Katagiri Roshi." And he talked to Katagiri Roshi and said, "What do I do now?" Katagiri Roshi said, "I don't know." So I think that the essence of what they taught him and what I'm saying to you is, this is a way to look deeply into yourself, to find out what your understanding is. What's your understanding of being in accord with the precepts, of living in accord with the precepts? That's a great place to start, rather than memorizing some do's and don'ts. To actually see how these unfold in your life.
Thank you.
Okay, maybe we have time for one more.
David Gill.
Hello, Hosan. Good morning.
Hi, David.
I have an observation or question about the third line of the chant, wearing the Tathagata's teachings. At first, that struck me as being sort of symbolic and abstract, but then thinking about it a little more, it dawned on me, it's describing something more like synesthesia, that like, how do you wear teaching, right? That there's an oddness to it, but it seems like there's a felt sense in that kind of odd activity of wearing a teaching. And could you, maybe you could say something a little more about what that line means or represents?
What Okamura Roshi says, we understand this phrase to mean something like, based on the wisdom of the original teacher, we reverently wrap ourselves in cloth. And you could say that wearing this robe with its borders and strips and modeling of a rice field is wearing if the teachings are about interdependence, this is wearing a map of interdependence, if that makes sense. If you look at the robe and how it's constructed, it is depicting this boundless reality of interdependence, which is manifest in a rice field, in its independence on air, water, life, a certain kind of order and structure. All of that is embodied, or it's modeled in the robe. And so this is a condensation. We're wearing a condensation of the Buddhist teachings. Does that make sense?
It does, yes. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Right. But I'd really like, let me just say, I have to think about it. I like this idea of synesthesia. It's like, so another synesthetic moment in the Dharma is we think of Avalokiteshvara as a bodhisattva who sees the cries of the world. Yeah, so that's really, that's also synesthesia. So evidently there are two questions here. Oh, response from Linda.
Yes, which says, yes.
You want to read it? Read those two?
Sure. Responding, the chat is beginning to pop right at the end of lecture. Linda Hess says, responding to David Gill, in general, ritual tends to be all about synesthesia. This becomes that. Everything can become everything. Power of symbols beyond symbolism. And Linda, if you want to drop a great article or a book that we can read on synesthesia or anybody, feel free to do that. And Hannah Mira says, as we make each stitch in sewing our robe, we say, I take refuge in Buddha in Pali. Thank you very much.
Thank you.